Jamel at the Birmingham, Alabama Fall Retreat, October 2016, his talk on progressive boundaries.
What I'd like to try to accomplish in the next 30 minutes or 25, 30 minutes, and then we'll open up for discussion, is just a look at the three circles from a couple of perspectives, and then talk about something that I kind of stumbled on a few years ago that I refer to as progressive boundaries, and how that works and how that's helpful in working with sponsees.
Who are you?
Oh, I am Jim, and I'm a recovering sex addict. And you, Tom, know who the hell I am. I have the opportunity and privilege to review the articles that are going to be published in the Outer Circle. I've been on that review committee for a number of years. And this month, the issue coming up November, December, Outer Circle, has a question to Dear Will. That's one of the columns in the Outer Circle. And the question is, why do I need to work the three circles? What I want to do is work the steps. I want to get on with the steps. I don't want to fool with the three circles. And my sponsor is bugging me about working the three circles. And I'm not happy with the answer that Will gave that will probably be published, but I want to answer that question because I think it's a very important one, and I think there's a very, very strong reason, essential reason, as a matter of fact, in this program to generate your three circles. It's just a tool. It's not the 12 steps, and as Robbie very clearly articulated this morning, you know, the key is working the steps, but there are a lot of tools along the way that can be helpful in that regard. First of all, when we define our three circles, we are in working with a sponsor, and again, doing it in a vacuum by yourself is not the way to do it. It needs to be done with a sponsor. In doing that, you define the terms so that when you're talking with each other, either on the phone or face-to-face, you're both talking about the same thing. Because, you know, it's really interesting. You can have a room with 8 or 10 people in it and bring up a subject and use certain terminology, and you'll have 6 or 7 different interpretations of what that means. And see, in AA, it's very clear. You're either drinking or you're not. They don't need three circles. They need a line. In this addiction, it's considerably more complicated. And when I'm talking with you about acting out behaviors or sobriety, you know, the flip side, if you and I are defining the terms differently, then we're not communicating as effectively as we could. So, just very quickly, that is, to me, the most important reason to do the three circles. So you've got to identify, to begin with, that inner circle. What are the behaviors, circumstances that I'm going to define as acting out? As your sponsor, I need to know that. As my sponsee, I need to know that from coming from you. So that's the most important thing. Because when, you know, and Robbie, I think, did a really nice job this morning of articulating the difference between, you know, among the multiple levels of relief, sobriety, and recovery. You know, those are different things. But when I use those terms, you may interpret them very differently from the way I interpret them. So it's very important in to get the most effective sponsor-sponsee relationship for both of us to be seeing the same thing, be talking about the same thing. When we're talking about the same thing. You know, you're either acted out or you're not. And last night, David and I were talking about this a little bit. And, you know, it's not uncommon to get a question or a phone call from a sponsee who says, I think I may have acted out last night. Well, did you or did you not? And, you know, if we define the terms up front. Now, in this fellowship, that the position of that definition may be slightly different from one person to another. There's no absolute definition. But it is really important in communicating with a sponsor and a sponsee to have that definition so that you're both talking about the same thing. I either acted out or I'm sober. And there's absolutely no gray zone in the middle if we agree on the front end of what those definitions should be. The outer circle, so the inner circle is vital. Got to define it. The outer circle, I have found there are two problems. Or two levels, I should say, not problems. But I find that often, particularly on first blush, somebody's relatively new in the program, that often the definition of outer circle activities is program-related stuff that is good and healthy. Literature, meetings, all of the program-related stuff. There's a whole another category of out-of-circle behavior that's important, and that is stuff that is totally unrelated to the program. It's diversionary things that you enjoy doing with people who may or may not be in the program, baseball games, golf matches, you name it. But so in thinking about out-of-circle behavior, I always push my sponsees to give me two categories. One, program-related stuff, and two, unrelated, non-related stuff in the outer circle. Now, that leaves the middle circle, which I think is the most problematic for us as addicts, because, again, there are two categories here as well. There's stuff that is explicitly sexual, pornography, massage parlors, you know, on down the line, but things that are very explicitly sexual that might not be acting out per se, but there's another category. It's those things that are not immediately thought of as being sexual in nature, but drive us in that direction. Might be a place. Drive by a massage parlor. It might be a neighborhood. It might be a person. It might be some kind of event that is not to anybody else in the outside world of a sexual nature, but to us as addicts might be triggering and might be something that would then lead us in the direction of acting out. So, I want to tell you that as a result of a personal experience with a sponsee, I sort of stumbled on this idea of progressive boundaries. This young man was an avid history buff. I mean, he was just read voraciously everything about particularly American history. Really a lot of Civil War history as well. And he would go to a bookstore there in Birmingham, and he would look at all the new titles in history. I mean, he bought more history books than the library did, I think. And he would then go to the pornographic magazine section, and then he would go act out. It was a clear sequence of events. So we said, okay, let's see how we can deal with this. First boundary that we put around that activity was not going to the magazine section. Go to the history section, check out your history titles, but don't go to the magazine section. Guess what? That didn't work. He would go, say, I'm not going to go over there, not going to go over there, not going to go over there. I think I'll go over there and just see what the new magazines are this month. You know, that reminds me of something I've heard in this program so many times, is that saying, I'm not going to act out, I'm not going to act out, I'm not going to act out, is really code for I'm going to act out. Because we're thinking about it. We're thinking about acting out. So at any rate, I said, okay, there are other bookstores in Birmingham. There's one in particular in the Homewood area called Little Professor that has great history titles. It has all the current stuff on history. Go to Little Professor. He actually lived in Homewood. Go to Little Professor. Don't go to Books a Million. Well, it turns out that he drove past Books a Million going to and from work. And mysteriously, his car would turn in at Books a Million whether he wanted to go there or not. Believe that, okay? So we tried that for 2, 3, 4 weeks, and it didn't work. He would go to Books a Million, look at the history titles, migrate to the magazine section, and then act out. So I said, okay, I tell you what, let's do one more thing. Bring a Birmingham map to the next time we get together, which is a week later. He brought a map, and he was driving 5-6 miles out of the way to drive by Books a Million. It was a very nice, low traffic, direct route from where he worked to his home that didn't go past Books a Million. We tried that for 2 or 3 weeks. And he said, you know, my car just wants to go that other way. You've heard that tale before. So what we did at that point was institute bookending. And that is, he would call me when he left work, and he would call me when he got home. And if it took more than 15 minutes to go from work to home, he had explaining to do, and that worked. So the thought occurred to me that what we had actually done there is taken a particular situation that was triggering to him and would lead him to acting out, and we built a boundary around it. It didn't really work. We built another one. It didn't really work. We built another one. And it did work. And in thinking about that, it seemed to me that what we were doing were building hedges that put that risky situation several notches away from where he was, so that he would call or something would happen before he got into that risky situation. So this then becomes the basis of developing kind of a relapse prevention plan. And again, and I reference again Robbie's talk this morning, because, you know, the goal is to be in recovery so that we're not constantly worried about relapsing. You know, like we tend to be relatively early in the program. So early in the program, if we can develop a relapse prevention plan that builds these added hedges around the activities that tend to push us in the direction of acting out, that can be extremely beneficial. One of the most important hedges is a phone call. And I try to institute somewhere along the line, as soon as possible. Phone call, because that can break the cycle. One other thing that I learned that's not original with me by any means, and we've heard it said in our meetings on numerous occasions, if I'm in a particular situation, location, or event that is triggering to me, and I am facing my inner circle, I'm more apt to move in that direction. If I'm at the exact same place, but I'm facing my outer circle, I'm more apt to move in a healthy direction. And I think that idea of perspective is very important, because in our mental mechanisms, we tend to always move in the direction we're headed. We don't back up very often. How many of you have ever driven in snow? I have, most everybody. I had to drive a boss this years ago out to a meeting in Vail, and it was a blizzard in the Colorado mountains, and the cute gal at the rental car place said, "There's one thing I need to tell you. You're from we at that time living in Houston, Texas." She said, "You're from down south. You don't know about this, but let me tell you one thing. Keep your eye on where you're going. If you look at the ditch, you're going to end up in the ditch. If you look at the truck that you're passing, you're going to end up sliding toward him." And, I found that to be really true, and it'd be kind of same story here. I'm going to tend to move in the direction that I'm looking. And if I'm not going to act out, I'm not going to act out, I'm not going to act out, I'm looking at acting out. And I'm going to tend to move in that direction. If I'm looking at out of circle things, I'm calling my sponsor. I'm saying a quick prayer. Any number of program related things that are in the out of circle, I'm more apt to move in that direction. Okay? Again, just to kind of recap, three circles is not by any means a substitute for working the steps, but it can be very helpful in defining terms and defining the processes and the tools that are most helpful to us as we do work the 12 steps. So I encourage you in that regard. Again, it's an adjunct. It's not the program. The program's the 12 step. Robbie articulated that beautifully this morning. So I'm going to stop there and see what comments, questions, or rebuttal any of you might have. Who has thoughts? George and then Sean.
Something I've noticed that in the outer circle is when working on myself early in recovery, but I think to place those things in there that were lofty ideals, things that I wanted to do, not necessarily things that I would do. I think for me it's important that I include in the outer circle things that I will do. I could say I'm going to journal every day, but if I don't write, and that's not a natural inclination for me, then I'm setting myself up for failure. I won't include enough things in my outer circle that I'm setting myself up for success, but it shows results. And I can emphasize that with the clients we do. Set yourself up for something that you know you will do, that you will do easily. And so
Great. Thanks, George. Sean?
I appreciate the matter of perspective addition to that because I was sharing with somebody, I think when I quit drinking, I was still a bartender. I'm a damn fine one after I quit drinking. That's not my thing. You know, I'm a responsible one. I've been a competitive one. I was a damn fine bartender. I appreciate the craft, not just the money. And it's because of the matter of perspective. Now, I wasn't mine anymore. Belong to the company, and I'm selling to them. That was it, you know. And I say that to say this in this program. I have always thought that simple avoidance, I don't mean simple as the meaning of that, but simple as a non-complicated. Simple avoidance is a half measure. I'm going to have to go that way one way or another day. I'm going to have to drive that road eventually. I'm going to, you know, I can't tell other people in my life that trigger me where they can and can't go to make sure that we don't run into one another.
Yeah.
Right, I can't tell television programs when to run and when not to run when I'm watching TV. So simple avoidance for me is, I believe for the program, is a half measure. So to make sure that I'm keeping it as a matter of perspective, right? I have to drive fast. I drive to work every day now. My school's in a new location to a place that used to be a mini red light zone in North Orlando. And certainly it's triggering, there's memories, but I'm not doing that anymore. And I'm going someplace else. So the matter of perspective is very important. You know, that's not going to make me go somewhere different instead because I'm going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So simple avoidance, probably extremely useful right away. I get that.
Yeah.
But the long term, it's a half measure.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you're never going to depower those triggers. You're always going to stay triggered if you should be simple.
Very good. Thank you. Jeff?
Come over there, T, and get you. Something that I was thinking about, Jim, while you were talking was that in my experience, a lot of times people, when they first hear about the three circles, they will consider the middle circle. I've heard it described as the toilet bowl, right? They say you want to stay on the outside of the toilet bowl, you know, and you know, that's the outer circle and that the inner circle is getting flushed down the toilet. So the middle circle is that thing, those things that, you know, get you closer to the toilet, you know, and you're going to get flushed down. And I think there's a grain of truth to that. But at the same time, there are some things that I do have and need to make sure that I put in my middle circle that are not necessarily bad things. They're just things that may put me in a situation that is triggering. Sometimes they're things that are necessary. For a long time, going to work was a triggering point for me because there were situations and things at work that I found triggering. But I needed to go to work. I couldn't avoid work. So I put that in my middle circle. Going to therapy was triggering for me for a while because with my therapist, I worked through some childhood trauma issues and things that were trigger points for me. But it was important work, and I needed to do it. So I put those things in my middle circle. And they weren't necessarily things to avoid, but as you mentioned, they were things to recognize as trigger points and make sure I'm facing toward the outer circle instead of facing toward the inner circle. And then on a separate topic, something I thought I might mention, it kind of occurred to me halfway through you were sharing. I went to Carla's workshop earlier where we created some boxes and like God boxes where you can put things in it that you want to give to God, or affirmation boxes where you can put affirmations in there. And I thought, what if I made an outer circle box with very simple actions that I could take? You know, something I could write on a card might be, you know, say the Serenity Prayer. Something else I might write in the card might be, you know, go for a run. Something else I might write in the card might be, you know, make a program phone call. Whatever it is, and just stick those in the box, and then when I'm feeling triggered or I'm in the middle circle and I need to face the outer circle, just open the box, just grab one out. Whatever the first thing is, just do it. So, anyway.
Shuffle and deal, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Good. Thank you, Jeff. Kent?
Yeah. All right, Kent, recovering sex addict. I've been sponsoring, you know, a little bit over a year right now, and I'm wondering how it works. I mean, my inner circle does include masturbation and pornography and a number of other things. How does it work for someone who has sponsoring who maybe their inner circle, maybe they don't have a background in pornography or masturbation or compulsive masturbation. Maybe their background was just commercial. I say just commercial sex, but commercial sex, but they don't have a background. Can sponsoring somebody who has a tighter inner circle that, you know, includes masturbation and pornography, does that, have you seen an experience that that kind of sponsorship relationship would work, where someone who doesn't have that experience with pornography could sponsor someone with a stricter inner circle?
Yeah, my opinion, we'll see what other opinions are. My opinion is that it doesn't matter what those inner circle activities are, but what does matter is defining them so that you and your sponsor are talking about the same thing. It can be, quote, lesser things or greater things. To me, that doesn't really matter. The important thing is to define it so that we know what we're working on. Does that make sense? Are there other comments about that question? Yeah, come in just a second. Garrett's bringing the mic to you. Yeah, Phil.
It occurs to me that as a sponsor, I may not have the same experience as a sponsee, but I'm going to learn from him what his experience is all about. And through that, what I gain from him is something that I can pass on to the next man who has the same issues. Yeah. So I would not consider that a barrier if the sponsor has the same issue. But it's a learning opportunity for both, I think.
Yeah. Very good. Richard?
When I get with a sponsee, the outer circle is mm-hmm. non-existent. In other words, it restricts, you know, that boundary. It's limitless. You know, from that middle circle out is limitless. It's those things that I put in the middle of those things that I walk away from. So by putting an outer circle around that, that seems limitating. So it's endless, the amount of things that I can do outside those two circles on the inside. Of course, it is all up to the person who is working the circles about what goes in what, with the help of the sponsor. But as a sponsor, if that person goes into that middle circle more than once, then that goes in the inner circle. That becomes a slip after that first time.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, along that same line, I've heard it described, I don't know, maybe in a recent discussion in one of our meetings, that there really isn't an outer circle along the lines of what Richard was saying. Outside of the middle circle, it's infinity. I mean, it's anything. It's everything. It's the world. You know, it's expansive. So, you know, to define the outer circle, you define those things that you think of off the top of your head. But it may be, there may be 1,000 other things that you run across that are, that are very beneficial to your, what did Robbie say this morning? Recovery, not sobriety, not, you know, it's not those other levels, it's the recovery level. Garrett, right, you go and get Matt first and then Matt over here.
Sorry,
Matt,
if I'm jumping in line.
Matt or Matt.
I'm Matt. I'm a sex addict.
Yeah.
The thing that comes to mind in this talk is awareness and acceptance. The having an awareness of what goes where. Maybe I'll leave out the acceptance part. That's, awareness is what I was thinking. Being aware of what those boundaries are, certainly for the inner circle, but then identifying what belongs where, then you really know where you stand. And the biggest challenge for me when I did my circles the first time is having anything in the outer circle. I didn't know what it was. I mean, I could say, oh, travel, you know, the big, big things, you know. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be complicated or really big, you know. Petting my cat is an outer circle behavior for me. You know, as you said, it's endless. But when I'm confused, I can refer to that, and I know precisely where I stand and precisely where I'm headed. No confusion. Because I can get confused, and I can distort things really effectively, really fast. But the circles have helped me know just exactly what's going on. When my brain's not working, the circles are reliable. Thanks.
Good. Thank you. Let's go to the mat number two over here. Run, Garrett, run. We get Garrett's exercise for him today.
Thanks. Mark Sex Addict.
Hey, Mark.
For me,
I said Matt. I'm sorry.
It's all good. For me, I had a lot of issues with, it was really easy to define the middle circle. I'm sorry, the inner circle. But I had a lot of issues with what to do with the outer circle. And along the way, as we were defining what the middle circle was going to be, I started placing things in the outer circle that were okay for me that may be somewhat related to the middle and the inner circles. For example, I'm allowed to talk to females. That's okay. Mm-hmm. I'm allowed to do that. But I, at some point in time, divorced myself for the past 5 years to talking to any females whatsoever, because that was my way of coping, of trying not to to act out. And that became unhealthy for me, to shun out 50% of the population of the earth. And so I put, talking to females is okay, therefore specifically identified in my outer circle.
Very good, Mark. Thank you. You mentioned something that really interesting, because I think identifying unhealthy patterns, even if they're part of the program, you know, as Mark described it, he was doing something that was part of his program, but it was unhealthy. And identifying that is really a positive move. You know, that's really great. Robbie? Oh, Tom, go ahead, and then
Thank
Robbie.
You. I'm Tom, and I'm a sex addict.
Hey, Tom.
Today, that's okay.
Okay, you know David used all your time last night. Okay, well, go ahead. Go ahead.
You clarified in the beginning that the three circles was not the program. And that's what I wanted to emphasize.
Yeah.
For me, it's a tool, it's whatnot. But I don't. My tools are the program, the 12 steps, and that's what keeps me sober. The circles don't keep me sober. They're identification. They're to help me realize what different actions are. And of course, the outer circle is one thing: God's will.
Yeah. Great. Thanks, Tom. Robbie?
Hey, guys. I'm Robbie, recovered sex addict. Really related to an earlier share on triggers, and I can't wait for tomorrow when my answer would be different or my feelings would be different. But for myself, I think situations aren't that triggering. It's my response to the situation, as someone is talking about TV and things like that. And I have several sponsees that have similar behaviors in all three circles, like one sponsee, Don, he has sex with his wife in all three circles, because it can be acting out with his wife if he's using a euphoric recall or something like that. It might be middle circle when he's not present, he's not honest, things like that. And it might be outer circle when God's involved
really
in the lovemaking.
Yeah.
And so when I think of triggering, when I think of middle circle behaviors, I also think with my sponsees, how can we put that same action into the outer circle and cut God in on the deal? And being the similar, your sponsee with the bookstore, how can we make that a God-centered event? So we're not just looking at the location of the event, but what action can I do? What surrender can I do? How can I bring God into the situation to have it both? And it continues to be about that clarification. So that the sponsee, so that I can really understand, where am I spiritually with this behavior? It's not just the location, not just the street I'm on, because I can be on the same street 5 times during the day, and my head can be further up my ass on each trip. So it all depends on where I am with God on that trip. It's not the location of my car. It's the location of my heart, really. I'll pass.
Great. Thanks, Robbie. Carol? Oh, I didn't see your hand up. Carla?
Hi, I'm Carla. I just wanted to emphasize one of the things that I help with my sponsees is that I always say that if you aim low, you can always hit it, but if you aim high, you work at it. Changing my life and turning it over to the will of God involved taking that outer circle right from the inner circle, really, for me, and making it infinite, and structuring it and sharing it with my sponsor at the time, and then it's the same thing I do with my sponsees, is write down the things that give me joy, that are healthy, that strengthen my spiritual connection with the God of my understanding, and we write it all out. And that's where I suggest that they live. Don't, it's just like we said before, if you go, I'm not going to act out, I'm not going to act out, I'm not going to go to that bar, I'm not going to have a drink. You know, if you go to the bar, you have a drink. Mm-hmm. So that's not the emphasis. It's to create new neural pathways. If you take something out, your brain wants to fill up that hole again. So to fill up that hole, you live in the infinite outer circle. Thanks.
Good. Carol and then Stephen. We've got about 5 minutes.
Thank you so much for your topic. And my name is Carol. I'm a sex and love addict. And I'm grateful to be here. It doesn't get any better than being at a retreat. And that's probably the best top outer circle behavior I could do, you know? And, you know, it's been a tough couple weeks. I've been tired. And when I start, you know, getting a little tired and fatigued, other old things start coming back to me, like, oh, that person looks kind of good, you know? And I, you know, so what do I need to do? I need to get some meetings in the bank. But I'm the great forgetter. I can't remember shit. When when it's good for me, I can't remember it. So like, that's why I have to keep coming to meetings. So you know, I mean, and that includes really good things. Like I love to sail and I love to kayak, and I don't remember to do those things when, you know, my day-to-day thing. I have to make myself do that. I have to in the morning. I have to do, okay, what am I going to do that's healthy today? I have to do that in my prayer and meditation, write out, you know, in my journal, what am I doing for, you know, spirituality? What am I doing for health and well-being that's going to be good for me today? Oh, I need to make a doctor's appointment. Or, you know, I need to do the, you know, because I can't remember those things because I will just, you know, life just happens. But, I agree with other people. You know, this is a tool, but working the steps is the solution. And, you know, like I have to be reminded, oh, I've got to do an inventory when, you know, when that sneaky resentment comes back. So anyway, you know, I have to be reminded. And, you know, sponsees remind me, oh, yeah, you need to be doing that. I need to be doing that. You know, that's what sponsees do for me, too, you know. So, you know. They help keep me sober. So with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thanks, Carol. Steven?
Hi, I'm Steve, sex addict. When I first got in the program, this diagram reminds me of the coin donation at the front of a lot of department stores where you swirl it around, and my son loves it, right? And the whole time I'm watching it, I'm like, that's like the middle circle, and then the bottom is the inner circle. So that's kind of the diagram I use in working with my sponsees, is I want to be on the outer rim. And I can circle it all I want. As long as I didn't start sliding down. And the middle circle behavior doesn't mean I'm going to go in, but it definitely points me in that way. So I like the direction you're facing variation on that. The other thing I think for the circles for me is all of it working with somebody is being honest. And I can tell somebody all day long what they want to hear, but if I'm not being honest with myself about what this behavior is, driving by this place, going to this place, these activities, then I'm not going to make a lot of progress. And those things can change. So that's the beauty of the circles, is something maybe middle circle, and it needs to become inner circle. And it could be inner circle now, but it loses its power, and now it's just the middle circle, even the outer circle behavior. So I think the key is to be honest with I share with my sponsees all the time. Like, I don't know why you keep doing this. Only you can look at it and see why you're going that way or why you're going to this location or what that power is for you. I would just encourage you to look at that and try to put that where it belongs. And in your heart, what you get out of that. And if you're doing that for a negative or a positive reason, we talk about it. And if you want to make progress, then you do that. So thanks.
Good. Thanks, Stephen. Any other comments before we wrap it up? Okay, well, thank you very much. Great comments. Appreciate your attention, and lunch will be ready shortly in the dining hall. Thank you.